1,044 days later, we can finally say Marc Marquez is back. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. I'm not going to lie, I normally try to be comedic with these intros every once in a while, but sometimes the message is powerful enough in itself. Hi, everybody. I'm Dre Harrison. Welcome to episode 541 of Motorsport 101. Of course, I'm your friendly neighborhood host as ever. And to get episode 3 of our, I guess this isn't really a catch up because we never did an Austria review, but it's
wasn't
our
catch
up. Wasn't
a lot to talk about, really.
No, exactly. Francesco Bagnaia wins. Lol. Sadly, when Bagnaia's done that roughly 7 times already this season, you know, it kind of loses its charm after the 5th time. On the other hand, when the Ducati's painted blue, now we're cooking. So yeah, we're going to talk about MotoGP and the Aragon Grand Prix to get you caught back up in the world of bike racing between now and this weekend, because this is one half of a doubleheader. I hope you like Misano, because we've added some Misano to your Misano, because now we've got Misano this weekend, a Misano test immediately afterwards, and then another race weekend at Misano a week afterwards. Isn't that lovely?
More Misano for everyone involved.
A tiramisu of Misanos. He's Cam Buckley.
You're damn right I am. Oh, I've been waiting for this. Oh, Dre, if there's one person in this world happier than me, it's you. And even that's debatable.
I've tried really hard to play this down. Like, I'm trying to be
Failing badly.
Says you, the man who, and I'm saying this on the record here, because we do keep scripts in these episodes. When Cam looked at the script, he decided to dig up his meme folder and added the picture of Donald Duck looking at the, quote, world's biggest nut, and put that in our script.
Look, and no words that I could write in there would describe it better.
And you're accusing me of being happier about this situation, yeah?
Yeah, because you waxed lyrical on it for multiple days.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I would never do such a
thing. Yes, you do.
Gentlemen, please. I got a question to ask.
Go on.
Aren't these tales of athletes coming back from adversity, from injury, aren't these stories supposed to be a little bit more suspenseful?
No. Open the entire shipment of whoop ass.
Yep.
There was not a time session this weekend where Marc Marquez was not P1.
Apart from the Sunday warm-up, but he didn't even bother taking part in that one because it was wet on the track. And he was going to dry out by the time the race came around because Aragon was a damn motherfucker. We'll talk about a little bit of that in a minute. But yeah, you'd think this was going to be more suspenseful and more dramatic. Maybe it was if you included the rest of this season so far, because it's not like Marquez hasn't come close.
It's like if Tiger Woods won the 2019 Masters by like 20 strokes.
Yeah. I must admit, O'Connell's got a good point there that, you know, maybe the magnitude of the victory did take a little edge off it. But as a Marc Marquez fan, I make no bones about it. Watching that man will automatically make you nervous because you know he's like 1 inch away from doing some crazy shit.
The limit is where he lives in every sense of the word.
Yeah. So are you ever comfortable watching a Marc Marquez performance on two wheels? Because I certainly ain't.
It used to be a lot more comfortable.
Not for me. So we'll be talking a little bit about that. Well, I say a lot about that. I put the double length notes in our script about this because it's the majority of the point of discussion. Let's be frank. I mean, if you read the race review, which we put up on our website, motorsport101.com, check out the blog section there for my thoughts on it in a bit more detail. I only gave it a 4 out of 10 for good reason. I'm not calling this race a classic by any stretch of the imagination, I promise. So, yes, that is very much a thing. But we'll also talk a little bit about a controversial incident towards the back end of that race between reigning world champion Pecco Bagnaia. It is weekend from hell. And a dramatic crash he had with Alex Marquez in what was a fight for third at the time, and one that is been simmering over until today. We'll talk a little bit about that because it was also a follow-up to this during Masano's pre-weekend press conference we've literally had in the last couple of hours. So we'll talk about that in a little bit as well. But places you can find us in the meantime, you can find us on youtube.com/bonusport101. You can find us on Twitter, aka Elon Musk's failed sued business investment, at DreHarrison101, at RJ O'Connell, and at CBuckley917.
The point. We miss you, friends in Brazil. We miss you so much.
We love you, Brazil. Keep chugging.
All things considered, day to day life is probably better there without Twitter, but we're still chugging away, doom scrolling.
Indeed, at motorsport_101 as well for the podcast official handle. You can also follow us on Instagram at motorsport101pod, our website motorsport101.com, and if you really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. You can back us at any level to get some DRR posts early. All of our early content, including episodes of the show itself, are at the $5 level, or you can upgrade to the $10 tier, where you can get into the supporters club of our Discord server, and you can listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded, as Jason is doing right now in the chat. Thank you, Jason, for listening in as ever. So after this quick musical interlude, we'll be back to talk about MotoGP's Grand Prix of Aragon and Marc Marquez.
One of the greatest comebacks in Grand Prix history is complete here in Aragon. It's win number 86, and none will feel quite as good as this. All the blood, sweat and tears, all the surgeries, all the sacrifices have been worth it. The scars are still fresh, but the old magic is still there. What a moment for Marc Marquez. What a win for Marc Marquez. He's been pure magic in Motorland. He's taken the sprint Grand Prix victory, pole position. He joined Ducati to enjoy racing again. He joined Ducati to win again. He's done both here in Aragon. So many doubts about whether he would ever, ever find this feeling, experience this feeling, taste this feeling once again as a MotoGP winner.
For a 60th MotoGP winner's trophy, an 86th Grand Prix winner's trophy.
Cam, you know what this was? This was game 7 of the 2004 ALCS, where we're just thinking, is Boston going to complete the comeback? And bam, they have a touchdown on the Yankees before you can blink an eye.
Yeah. Read my lips. Marc Marquez is back, even if it's for one weekend only. Marquez did only what Bagnaia has done, earlier this year in Assen. He was perfect. He led every single session that he took part in, which again was everything but the wet Sunday warm-up. He qualified on pole by over 0.8 of a second, led every lap of the sprint and Grand Prix, fastest lap in both. Call it a super grand slam, career win number 86, and his first Grand Prix victory in 1,044 days. Y'all, it feels good.
We're back.
It's good to be back. It really is. Man.
Sun is shining.
Crops are flourishing.
Skin moisturized.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Minding everybody's damn business. It's a beautiful time. I guess it's only fair, given I'm apparently the most excited man on earth to talk about this. Only fair that I apparently go first on this. But it was genuinely, I shed a tear when he crossed that line. I genuinely was moved by it. I there were times where I didn't think this was ever going to happen again with Mark. And there were times that even he admitted he wasn't sure if this day was ever going to happen again. I don't want to. Please forgive me if I come across as overdramatic on this one, but when you consider the story of this man's career and you consider everything that has happened in the last 5 years to get to this point, from the 2019 season, which was one of the greatest, if not the single greatest MotoGP season ever seen on camera, to masking Honda's problems despite that, 2020 starting, the arm break, the 4 surgeries, the bent plate opening his patio window, the infection, the 2 bouts of diplopia that he got on top of that as well. Honda getting worse and worse, and even Marquez no longer being able to mask Honda's huge problems with its development and bike in general. The incredibly emotional Ducati switch that he did not want to do. He felt like he had no choice but to go switch to Ducati because he gave Honda every chance in the world. He left nearly 20 million euros on the table to make that move happen. Ride a satellite Duke, ride last year's equipment, learn how to ride a bike again, learn how to ride a Ducati for the first time in his career, the first time in 10 years he'd ridden a different manufacturer. All of this has led up to this. And I don't care if it's a one weekend deal. I don't care if it doesn't lead to a championship campaign or not. I've talked myself out of that for most of the season as it is. That was magic. That was a wonderful, wonderful moment. And you could tell the sport had been waiting for this moment for a long time. And he's back, the king of this sport. And everybody just had to bow down this weekend because Marc Marquez was invincible. There was nothing any one of the fastest riders in the world could do to stop this man from dominating. And that was the end of the matter. It really was. He had a couple of minor twitches. He apparently nearly lost the front on the first lap of the sprint. But after that, he was perfect. There is no other word for it than that.
Was it kind of a reminder that just like, you know, when this guy has all the tools in his arsenal that he needs and is in good health, that he's like so clearly above the rest of the field that it's not even funny?
That's basically what this was. I mean, I think a lot of people, including me, forgot just how good Marc Marquez is at Aragon because it plays into the DNA of what's made Marquez so brilliant over the years. One, it's an anti-clockwise track. Marquez has a dirt track background where you only turn left. So he's always been more confident in the left-handers. And Aragon, as said, is anti-clockwise. So that goes in his favor. And let's not forget, this is the first Aragon Grand Prix we've had in 3 years. This was a return to the calendar for this track. It hadn't been on the calendar since 2021. And it had been resurfaced in order to, you know, try and, you know, placate MotoGP coming back. And, well, the resurfacing wasn't good. There was a lot of criticism about that resurfacing. A lot of people were echoing shades of Silverstone in 2019. You know the one.
Hashtag cancelled.
Hashtag cancelled, etc. And of course, 2 days of rain overnight during the weekend, because it rained on Friday night going into Saturday, and then it rained on Saturday night going into Monday. So all of the rubber that was being put down was also being washed away. So it was low grip, greasy track, slippery conditions, all shit that Marc Marquez is really good at. So if you wanted to throw the best case scenario together for a Marc Marquez victory, this was probably it on paper.
I mean, pretty much every equalizing factor that you could throw out on that track, they did. And in general, early on, it looked like he was going to have some competition from the bikes that are usually pretty good in low grip scenarios, which was Aprilia. When they fell away, the gap to the field was astonishing. Every time Marquez threw his leg over that bike, he was the better part of a second clear of the field.
This was like 2019 Marquez. It was, I've got half a second in my back pocket at will. And that's simply all it was. No one could live with it.
He was like, able to punch 3 to 4 tenths a lap on Jorge Martin whenever he wanted to. Mm-hmm. That's not a sequence of words that has happened before.
Jorge Martin, one of the fastest raw speed riders we've ever seen in MotoGP.
What have we been saying all year about Jorge Martin? Just take the points, damn it. He saw Marquez on the first lap of the Grand Prix. He's like, all right, second's good.
Yeah. Jorge Martin admitted after the sprints on Saturday, I'm taking the points. I'm not going to race Marc Marquez even if the opportunity presents itself. He knew from Saturday he didn't have an answer for him And Jorge Martin is an arrogant mother trucker. He believes in his own hype, and that's understandable. And we all know he's got ridiculous raw speed. He was uncontested for second place for most of the weekend, and Martin didn't have an answer for him. Jorge Martin, in open air, did not have an answer for Marc Marquez around Aragon, which just goes to show you how utterly dominant Mark was this weekend. It's one of Marquez's most dominant race weekends, period, regardless if it was Ducati or Honda.
I mean, he didn't have weekends like this very often in 2019, and that was the most dominant season of the modern age. And just watching him go around the track, and we've said before that if I could watch Marc Marquez lap a bike around a track all day, get the racing bit. I mean, he looked like he was completely in his element, bike dancing underneath him. Just the amount of speed he was able to carry through the corkscrew, through the final turn, was just on another level of just about anyone else. And he could do it just lap after lap after lap. In the sprint, in the Grand Prix, it didn't matter.
I love that Jack Miller watched the film of Marquez going around, and he said, when he's in that kind of form, there's nothing any one of us can do about that, is what he openly said, because you see the onboards. He's got 5 degrees more lean angle than Francesco Bagnaia does going around these corners. It's simply put, Bagnaia openly admitted, I can't do what Marquez does around here in these conditions. It's that simple. It's easy.
And that's Bagnaia's bike. That's his baby from last year.
Yeah.
This one had some upgrades, didn't it, though? Like, for the first time in a while, like, Gresini's actually getting upgrades on the bike.
They said that, but it didn't have any of the late season aero bits on it, which were a bunch of the main upgrades. So we'll see in that regard. But the visible upgrades that the 23 got over the course of last season were not on the bike this weekend.
Yeah,
and you can see them. It's fork wings and a bunch.
So what did they do with it? Actually, did they just say they were upgrading it and just be like, "Not really"? LOL.
Do they just claim there's upgrades coming for this bike? I'll believe it when I see it. Because Ducati hasn't really got a reason to at this point.
You're spending money and development time, unless it's just recycling the upgrades from last year. You're going down a development path that you've already surpassed with the 24. Although you wouldn't know it watching this weekend, because pretty much all the 24s were out to lunch.
Yeah. Martin also got his ass blasted.
Yeah. In fact, Grazini, up until an incident later on with Bagnaia, they look like the best Ducati team top to bottom.
They were. In my opinion, it's as simple as that. They were the best Ducati team here. They were the most comfortable. And again, I think a lot of that is Marquez-infused DNA, but I think in general they were the strongest team here. Frankie Karcecki cooked, again, like he's so often done as crew chief in that technical camp. Grassini knows what they're doing. They've done this with Bastianini a couple of years ago. They know they can generate something resembling close to a title campaign with the right rider and right crew chief, which we saw with Enea 2 years ago, let alone now. It's more than doable with what this Gresini camp can do. So compliments to the team as well. They played a vital role in this one. It was a remarkable event, and I've seen all the social clips. I've seen the world's commentary boxes commentate on that final lap, set this up. It was very Alex Jakes-esque. 2 years and 11 months in the making. We saw the fan club. We could hear the fan club over the bottom end of the wall lose their collective shit when this went down. And I've said it before and I'll say it again. This sport is far more interesting when that man is at the front challenging for shit. And this is no disrespect to Francesco Bagnaia or Jorge Martin, who are incredible bike riders in their own right, but they are not Marc Marquez. No one moves the needle in this sport like he does anymore.
How many times have we said this year, like, that man, that race would have been really boring if it weren't for Marc throwing haymakers at the front of the field?
He is the entertainment. He is the man. He is
the good and the bad. It will still be exciting with Marc.
Yeah, it's magic. They're like this it's one of those, like, this season has been a reminder of what this sport can be when he's on it. He is the sport's antagonist. He's the one that will draw the Dark Magician. He is the catalyst. He is the one where the cap goes backwards, shit goes down, good, bad, or indifferent. He's him.
I'm the final boss.
Yeah. Check for goosebumps, etc. It's all of that and more. And yeah, it was just simply put, it was Marquez at his most brilliant. Now, like I said before, I'm not expecting anything to... we're not making the same mistake we did with Bastianini after he won at Silverstone and got the double win there and talk about a title campaign. He's still 70 points back. It's not realistic to expect a comeback, especially with Misano, a double header at Misano coming up over the next two rounds, and that is Bagnaia's backyard. Pencil him in for those two races.
If he takes one of those in Misano, then we can start talking. But you need a bigger
sample
size.
Just enjoy the moment, man. Marquez is back on a winning bike for the first time since
2021.
Yeah,
and that wasn't a winning bike. That was Marc Marquez winning with a losing bike. Because remember the war he had with Pecco here a couple years ago, and the bike would not stop.
Yeah,
no matter how hard he tried.
Every time he tried to lunge it down the inside of Bagnaia 3 years ago in 2021, just one of the best modern day MotoGP races you'll ever see, Marquez just could not get the bike stopped, and that's ultimately what led him to lose that fight with Pecco. It was simple. The Honda could not handle what Mark was trying to do to it, and it just did not work out. Man out of
33 degrees of rotation in his humerus.
Yeah. And he was...
hindsight, that win is probably even more special, even if it was the false dawn, because we probably thought, like, oh yeah, Mark is back. And then as it turns out, no, he actually was not back long term. In fact, things are going to get worse before they get better.
A lot worse.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's why I said when I wrote about it, and I stand by it, I think we are witnessing one of sport's great comeback stories. Unfortunately, MotoGP doesn't get the world press coverage on a global stage that other sports do. But it should.
I mean, the only one in MotoGP that I can think of on this level was Mick Doohan's leg break in 92.
Mm.
And, took a couple of years for him to come back. Leg dangling off the bike.
Mm.
Couldn't use a rear brake. Had to invent a thumb brake. And, he won 5 titles in succession.
Yeah.
It could have been more if his leg didn't give out again.
He should have been more.
It should have been more. So, I mean, if he continues to heal up and he continues learning this Ducati into next season on that factory team, anything's possible.
I'm just so glad we can bury the narrative that, Marc Marquez will be nothing without a bike that isn't awful. He's such a Honda merchant. He's such a merchant of fast bikes.
The best bad bike rider on earth, and he's pretty damn good at riding a good one, too.
Yeah, who'd have thought? It's like we're playing reverse narrative juice on this one. It's quite the statement. I also love the fact that apparently he took a gift of a photo montage of his old victories and celebrated with his old Repsol Honda team the same Sunday after he got the win and said, "This is also your victory as much as it is mine." It's an incredibly classy gesture.
Repsol Honda dapped him up on socials, man.
Of course.
Well, who were they going to dap up? The guy who's retiring, who was top Honda by a mile this weekend. Because
he's not retiring. He's just going to be a developmental rider. It's not retirement, I promise.
Two shout-outs.
It's retirement. Yeah.
It is retirement. Two shout-outs. Johan Zarco getting that piece of junk into Q2.
Outright.
And then immediately getting game-ended. Oh, it's gone.
Yeah. Johan Zarco, who qualified top 10. First time a Honda's made Q2 outright all season long. So shout out to Johan Zarco. He was brilliant. Alex Rins, 9th as well in the Grand Prix. On that Yamaha. About time we got the real Alex Rins back. Superb performance from him. Had absolutely no business performing that on that Yamaha right now.
I say, in the was it in the sprint? And I suppose this segues us quite nicely into the Pecco section.
Hmm.
You see Pecco go by Fabio on the Yamaha like it was a Moto2 bike.
Yeah, like the dive bomb into the turn 14 chicane that Fabio put down. It's like, oh, he's got him. And then, like, within 200 meters of the straight start, and bang, now he's back in front again. Just need
pull like four bike lengths on him by the braking zone.
It's not even that the Ducati grunt is that powerful anymore, because Aprilia, Honda, and KTM can all keep up with it in a straight line now. But, like, Yamaha is just so far off the eight ball with its engine that Fabio just could not defend himself in that sprint until the very final lap, where Bagnaia really just could not turn that bike in the sprint.
Yeah. Dud front tire. Wild.
Yeah. What a dud front. I mean, let's talk about Pecco Bagnaia's weekend in general before we even get to the Alex Marquez incident.
First,
go on.
Give a raise to the person who hard cut to Hernandez in the Repsol Honda garage.
Oh,
as Mark was crossing the line in the sprint.
Oh yeah,
man.
Not the first time they've done that, Dawn, and they've done that with Alberto Puig in years past as well, who's running that ship, and they've cut to Honda on before. And let's just say TV direction knows exactly what it's doing. It's devilish, but I do enjoy it. I can't lie. And how far away from leader was Luca Marini, says Jason in the chat. 1:52. Started the race from pit lane.
Yeah, I mean, in the sprint, the Honda was genuinely 2 seconds a lap off the pace. Enough talking about my suffering. Let's talk about Pecco Bagnaia's suffering.
Pecco Bagnaia had his worst weekend of the year, even before we get to the Alex Marquez incident. He qualified second. You know, that was a big step forward, because his was it third? Oh, sorry,
it was third. Importantly, it was third.
Yes. Now, the thing is, what I got to mention about this is that Bagnaia started the weekend awfully. He was awful in first practice. In the actual timed practice later on Friday, he did get into the top 10 automatically and eventually qualified second, a pretty solid, or third, I should say, to get on the front row. Not a bad salvage job from given where his weekend had started. But as I mentioned earlier, it rained on Friday night and on Saturday night, so there was a lot of standing water. And again, the combination of water and bitumen coming up from the resurfacing of the track on the left-hand side of the grid. Now, as I mentioned, Aragon is anti-clockwise, so the pole on the grid starts on the right-hand side. Bagnaia was starting on the left, where there was still patches of water and bitumen from the resurfacing. It was a dirty, filthy grip. No grip. And on the start line of the sprint, Bagnaia, well, I guess we'll see it this way. Have you ever seen that Family Guy grip with the black weatherman where he goes, "It's raining sideways"?
Yeah.
That was GP24. Yeah, but he almost ended up like hitting a spear on Pedro Acosta like his name was Roman Reigns. It was bad out here. Was able to go on, RJ.
I'm just putting up the number one.
Oh, okay.
I'm just doing the Roman Reigns font.
Yeah, absolutely. Do the tour. Anyway, as I was saying, yeah. Pagnaia's start was awful. He dropped to about sixth place, and then he found out when he was turning in for his bike on the sprint race that he had had a dud Michelin front tire, and he was barely able to hold on to ninth place and get the last point in the sprint. Boy, if you saw him when he got back to his garage after that sprint race, the death stare he gave to the Michelin technician.
If looks could kill. That, if that technician would not be here anymore.
Same brain cell. Yeah. It was. If they were, what's the Italian for exterminate? It'd be like cutting out a Doctor Who with the Daleks. Bagnaia just gave him a death stare. Yeah. He didn't outright say it, but he basically implied that he had a dud Michelin front.
You can see it. I mean, the bike just would not turn.
It would not turn.
And made worse, the wheel spin he got off the line opened his rear tire as well. So he was effectively on two dud tires going into turn one on the sprint.
Right.
A recipe for disaster. The only thing that was helping him was that big, beautiful Ducati engine, because the only thing that that GP24 was doing was going down the straights.
Yeah, that's all he could do to defend himself. And Aragon's not that kind of track. I mean, when Fabio Quartararo is beating you outright in a sprint, something has gone terribly wrong. No disrespect to Fabio, but Yamaha's not in a good place right now either. But that's where we're at right now. Bagnaia limped home to ninth in the sprint. Had an even worse start in the Grand Prix, dropped to seventh, but at least in the Grand Prix itself, his race pace was better. He was able to claw his way through that second group from Brad Binder in it and Fabio Di Giantonio, who put in a valiant effort given he almost busted his shoulder over the course of the weekend. But clawed his way back, got up. He was up to fourth place. He was gunning down Alex Marquez, who was in a very lonely third place, 10 seconds behind Jorge Martin. But he was in a very lonely third, but Bagnaia was coming down at him at about half a second a lap with three to go. Alex Marquez makes a mistake at the bottom of the hill where the wall is, goes wide, tries to take the racing line. Bagnaia decides to go the long way around the outside of the right-hander up the hill. Bagnaia thinks he's cleared Alex Marquez. He hasn't. They make contact. They hook bikes, and there's only one way that ends. Both men crash into the gravel trap on the outside of the track. Nasty spill. Bagnaia is a very lucky boy. Had 170 kilo of bike on top of him as he was going through that gravel trap. Thankfully, nothing more than bruises for all parties involved.
Yeah, like, holy shit. Pecco Bagnaia is such a lucky boy.
Yeah, and he knows it,
pinned,
too.
He was pinned under Alex's bike for a good 2 seconds as they went off into the gravel.
Indeed. Thankfully, everybody involved was able to walk away from it. It was, thankfully, only bruises and damaged egos, thankfully. But it did get a bit nasty in their post-race debriefs. But Alex Marquez claimed that he had no obligation to back down from where he was in the corner, and that Bagnaia could see him, and I couldn't see where Bagnaia was, so I just kept going and assumed that he wasn't there. Bagnaia was quite nasty in his comments afterwards. He said he could hear that Alex Marquez had opened the throttle up after they had made contact, and that he basically accused Marquez of doing it on purpose. Now, in Bagnaia's defense, he has since apologized for those comments. He did so at the Thursday press conference this afternoon. He did it publicly. Apparently, he's also spoken to Alex behind closed doors and apologized to him. He said that he still didn't necessarily take responsibility for the crash. He still thought it was Marquez's fault, but he said he was too strong in his worded statement. Gentlemen, what did we make of that incident? Because that was a wild one. Probably the other big flashpoint of this race and maybe this championship, because it also means that Bagnaia left Aragon with just one extra point to his championship tally.
Jorge Martin back in the lead. 5-point lead into a 23-point deficit by my calculations.
So this weekend has kind of bailed Martin out of one of his big spills from earlier in the year. To more or less wipe that off the books.
Yeah. Martin back in front by 23 points. So basically a Grand Prix in hand again. Not for the first time this year, but now he's got to go chase it again.
Yeah. They just keep leaving points on the table one way or another.
Very McLaren.
First off, how very McLaren of them. First off on the incident, I'm very glad both of them are okay. Because when you lock two bikes, it's in the hands of the racing gods when you lock two bikes.
I don't think I've seen that in a hot minute. The way that they lock up like dude. Jesus, dude. Yeah. You got dudes sliding underneath their bikes and shit. It's crazy.
I'm glad both of them are okay. I'm glad that Pecco's cooled off, because it's never a good look to claim that someone is hampering you deliberately. I wonder where he learned that from.
Yeah, well, I'll comment on that in a minute, but carry on, Cam.
As far as the incident itself, which is, I think it's the rolling definition of a racing incident.
I agree.
At that point, if Alex had seen him, which I believe him if he says that he didn't, because these bikes don't have mirrors, and Bagnaia is coming in from the outside, At that point, Alex really has to back off and give him the corner. But Pecco didn't have him cleared when he turned in. And he more or less took the corner. He swung in wide and then took the corner as if there was no one alongside him. And Alex still was. It's just a it's one of those racing deals.
That's exactly how I've got it. I mean, if Alex Marquez says he didn't see Bagnaia, then I haven't got a reason to not believe him. I think he's being sincere. It's a right-hander. He's looking at the apex. That's an understandable and valid, in my opinion, comment. I don't think there's anything cynical or malicious in what Alex Marquez said or did on track. And for me, I thought Bagnaia was bang out of order for the comments he made after the fact. I could see what the sentiment that Cam was getting at. I'm going to blatantly say it. There's still obvious, blatant beef between the Rossi camp and the Marquez camp. It's been nearly 10 years since the 2015 season, and we still have shades of Bagnaia's mentor, Valentino Rossi, that the moment that he sees a Marquez brother, the Bozo gene comes back out. It's like Jin's devil gene in Tekken all over again.
It's like at some point, and like if you heard rider opinions after this, it was very much split into a couple of camps. Unfortunately, it feels like pretty much the VR46 camp all kind of united in, it's Marquez being over aggressive again, isn't it?
But here's the thing. Alex Marquez has no obligation to give up that corner.
He didn't go off track.
No.
He just went wide. And he's focusing on his own race at that point to a certain level.
Yeah.
And Pecco more or less shoots the gap around him and he makes it work. Problem is that he doesn't have the bike cleared. He doesn't need to swing that hard.
No.
In a championship situation like this, where he doesn't need to be taking a risky pass.
I think it's arrogance, because he did the same thing to Enea Bastianini during the sprint race at a certain point. Early on in the sprint, before the real bad problems with that front tire.
It's like the sentiment, like, if I put my bike here, they're going to back out.
And I made this point when I wrote about it. It's the third time this season Francesco Bagnaia has done this with a Marquez brother this season, because let's not forget we had Portimao and the Grand Prix where both he and Mark both crashed at the end of that race. We did it again at Jerez that time. It was just elbow rubbing, nothing more, thankfully. And this was the third time he's done it. It's the third time he's made contact, and it's the second time he's crashed. Now, my criticism of the situation is, if you're Francesco Bagnaia, you need to make better decisions. You were the faster man. Comfortably, you were taking half a second a lap out of Alex Marquez at that point in time in the race, and you had three laps to go next time by. You had all the time in the world to make a clean pass. Why are you taking such a risky outside lunge going up the hill on a blind right-hander when you know exactly where Alex Marquez has pinned his bike? It's completely unnecessary, because even if he makes the move, he's still got to go around the outside of him going into the left-right chicane, which is almost immediately after that corner.
Like, at some point, Pecco needs to be his own man here. And being a mouthpiece for Valentino Rossi, like taking up arms against the Marquez brothers, you just threw a Sunday away where you were going to limit the damage as about as best as you could against a Martin who soundly beat you this weekend.
Mm-hmm. Comfortably. Wasn't in the same postcode.
You do not need to be getting into your mentor's personal beefs.
Yeah, that's one thing. And two, make better decisions on track. This was unnecessary. The whole thing was unnecessary. Don't get me wrong. I'm not holding him fully accountable for this incident. I completely agree with Cam, and I agree with what Neil Hodgson said on commentary. Hodgson, again, I've been critical of him on TNT in the past, but when he gets it right, he gets it very right, in my opinion. And he said straight up, Alex Marquez is not focusing on where Bagnaia is on track. All he can do is run his own race and recover as well as he can from the mistake that he's made and try to get back in rhythm. He doesn't know where Bagnaia is on track. Bagnaia has gotten the momentum. He's taken the natural racing line and swept around, but he's also got bad depth perception because he didn't see where Marquez's bike had started. It's that, and I agree with Jason in the chat, when he sees Pecco, it's way too late.
At that point, the crash has already begun.
yeah, at that point, there's nothing he can do about it. Contact was inevitable at that point. Bagnaia needs to realize like, at that it's point not in the
corner.
It.
At that point in the corner, like, if Mark, if because of the nature of these bikes, if he grabs the front brake, he's going down, and he's probably taking out Pecco anyway. If right. he rolls out of the throttle, he's effectively standing the bike up, and he might hit Pecco anyway. Once he sees him, it's too late. But yeah, like if you are the new Francesco Bagnaia and you are racing for a championship, and we're evaluating you in the sense of a champion and a championship contender, you have to have better decision making in the heat of the moment.
Once again, it's the exact criticism we've always said about Bagnaia. We know he's got incredible speed, incredible racecraft. He's got every tool in the bag you could ever need to be a dominant MotoGP multiple-time world champion. That's never been the issue with Bagnaia. But we've said this about Bagnaia for the last 2.5 years. He will give you ways to beat him. He is...
Well, our two championship protagonists are extremely vulnerable.
Yeah.
And they do it to themselves.
Yeah, they're mid-level bosses in a video game that still show you where the weakness is to hit them on their body. Like, here's the arrow. It's over here. Hit me here. That's Bagnaia, because for all his brilliance, and he is a brilliant MotoGP rider, that make no mistake, the Bozo gene is always there. And unfortunately, he's done it again. And he's making life needlessly difficult for himself.
Well, like, in... When Bagnaia is under pressure, I don't know if I'm going to get the most serene, calm rider I've ever seen ride a MotoGP bike, or someone who throws it all away. There's no pattern to it. It just happens one way or the other. There's been a lot more good than bad, but the bad still being there is why Jorge Martin is still in this championship, despite himself exhibiting major bozo gene.
Dude, between those two and Sebastian Buemi at COTA, this has been a banner weekend for Bozo Gene.
Sebastian Buemi is lucky as hell that we don't follow WEC on a race by race basis.
Because
I would have paragraphs to say about that motherfucker.
And yeah, Bagnaia leaves Aragon with just 1 point. Jorge Martin leaves Aragon with 29. And that's the difference that it's made. And it's put the pressure back on Bagnaia, where he's now probably going to have to... Because the thing is, right, we're doubling up with Misano for the next 3 weeks of action. Like, we've got a week in between these two Misano races. But we've got two Misano races growing up. We know that Bagnaia is going to be heavy favorite going into these two race weekends. If he cleans house, the least he can take out of Martin is what? 16 points? If my maths is right, 3 in the sprint, 5 in the Grand Prix each, times 2, you get to 16.
We know that he is completely capable of doing that. The problem is that he's making it a necessity for himself.
Yeah, because the thing is, right, what I was about to say is that after that, the flyaway start, and Jorge Martin is better on the flyaways than Bagnaia is. We saw it in Indonesia last year before he crashed. We saw it in Buriram last year, where he won that brilliant three-headed monster fight with Bagnaia and Brad Binder. Like, Martin is a stronger flyaway rider than Bagnaia is. And if you're Martin, I'm telling you right now, take the seconds. If you feel like you can't go over the limit to beat Bagnaia, take the seconds. The season will go back in your favor once the flyaways kick in. Survive for now. Like, it's like the final boss fight in Fight Night Champion. Don't go after Isaac Frost straight away. He's going to kill you. We gotta work the body, protect the carton, and then you can unload in round 8. Like, that's a very obscure reference. I mean, if you get that one at home,
one,
like,
I understand. Well played.
Oh yeah, but
you remember when boxing got mainstream video game exposure? That's crazy.
Good times, good times. Couple of things to tie up before we get out of here. By the way, yeah, as mentioned, we've got a couple of Misano Grand Prix coming up.
To celebrate San Marino's first FIFA win in 20 years.
San Marino won a game of football. Hell yeah, beautiful. It's Ian Liechtenstein, but who fucking cares? You'll love to see it. Also, we got confirmation today as well that, well, two bits of confirmation. Obviously, Taka Nakagami, sadly, is retiring from MotoGP at the end of the season. He's going to be a full-time development rider for HRC going forward. I just want to say a salute to that man, because he's a damn good bike rider and has been for a very long time, and has been an incredibly loyal servant to Honda and will continue to be for years to come. He gave the best years of his career away to trying to figure out how that Honda could ride in, and sadly, it was very much for naught. But a salute to Taka Nakagami, one of the good ones out there, as always. Also, it got announced today as well. Miguel Oliveira officially confirmed that Pramac Yamaha for 2025 and 6. Finally confirmed. I'm really glad Miggy's still on the grid. He's a damn good MotoGP bike rider. 5 wins to his name in KTM colors in the not-too-distant past. I'm very glad he's still going to be on the grid. Apparently, Fabio put in a big word for him to get a Yamaha contract, and that's what he's on. So congrats to him. Only one seat left on the grid that hasn't been confirmed, and we all expected to be Jack Miller, announced in the coming days and weeks. And that will complete the 2025 MotoGP.
We got Somcat Chantra confirmed in the seat vacated by Taka Nakagami. The stock is not high at the moment, but the last time we saw a MotoGP rider come from a part of Southeast Asia that didn't have a lot of representation, Hafiz Syren, not a winner, not a podium finisher, but not as bad as we all feared he would be.
I wish God has mercy on him, for the RC213V will not.
Yeah, I don't envy him on that one. But absolutely wild scenes there. A couple of shout outs before we get out of town as well. Moto 2, that title fight is getting very spicy, by the way. Shout out to Jake Dixon winning the Moto 2 race over there, second win in the last few races. All of a sudden, Jake Dixon's got the hot hand, which
just
is
just the time to not get a job in MotoGP.
Yeah, a week after he signed the deal to go to Mark VDS for Moto 2 next year on the Boscanoro chassis. I see what you did there, Jake. Very clever. I see what you did there. Gonna try and get that good chassis. Although, isn't it kind of funny that Kalex, now they've dropped away from Honda affiliation again, is now cooking again?
Everything Honda touches turns to mush. I know.
Well, gave it away, honestly. But yeah, top 6 in the Moto 2 title fight now is covered by 50 points, which is actually fascinating. Garcia leads the way over Agüero by 12. Lopez is in the mix. Dixon's in the mix. Joe Roberts, who still, despite crashing on the final lap of the race in a fight against his own teammate, Marcos Ramirez, is still only 32 points back. And then you got Dixon on 43 back, and Aldeguero 50 points back as well. But yeah, very fascinating Moto 2 title fight going on right now as well. Do keep an eye on that. It's well worth watching. Great race, by the way. The Arbolino-Dixon fight at the front was very, very good. It's good to see Arbolino back to something resembling his best again after a difficult season so far. Also, shout out to Jose Antonio Rueda, who won in Moto 3. Fun fact, he became a MotoGP's 400th different race winner across their 3 main classes. 400 up for MotoGP across the board. I love little stats like that. I can't help myself. They're quite fun. So keep an eye on that. Also, David Alonso is taking Jake Dixon's seat at Aspar. I know, shock horror, that David Alonso is going up to the team he's already with. but so yeah, well, you're all shocked. Keep an eye on him in Moto 2 next year, to say the least. As mentioned, MotoGP will be back this weekend for the Grand Prix of San Marino at Misano. Keep your eyes on that one. We'll be back next week to review that one. But I hope you guys enjoyed the show. I've been Dre Harrison, Dave Benard, RJ O'Connell and Cameron Buckley. Until next time, thank you very much for listening. We'll see you next time. 93.
Now just go out and do it again.